Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Google CEO Eric Schmidt says it's not an epic winner-take-all battle. Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates said last week that keyword search, the cornerstone of the booming Google empire, is not the only way to find what you need when it comes to information. But if you want to understand the future of information and the trillions made in finding and using it, the battle between Google and Microsoft for dominance of that future is a good place to start. Microsoft made its fortune with shrink-wrapped software. Google owns the web-based search and service model. Now the two are colliding. Up next on Point, Google versus Microsoft and the future of information. Joining me now from San Francisco is Kevin Delaney. He covers Google for The Wall Street Journal. Kevin, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Here we are. Google CEO Eric Schmidt says this is not a battle to the death with Microsoft or anybody else. And yet, if you look out into the world, it is full of speculation that it is exactly that. Is Google gunning for Microsoft? And if so, how, Kevin?
Well, I think what you said at the beginning is really accurate, that these two companies have their roots in different areas. Microsoft has its roots in software, and Google has its roots in searching the web. But what we increasingly see is that these two, their areas of core focus are actually increasingly overlapping. Microsoft has now decided that it wants to be a web search powerhouse. It's getting into online advertising in a very serious way, and that's Google's core business. Google, on the other hand, is providing more and more software for people to run on their computers, including what's called desktop search software, which lets you find things on your hard drive. This starts to overlap very seriously with Microsoft's core business. In other areas, they're competing as well. You see, we saw last year there's a lawsuit. There are several lawsuits, actually, between the two companies over a key executive that Google had poached away from Microsoft to head Google's China operations. And so there may be room for both companies, but what we are seeing is that they are bumping up against each other a lot.
All over the place.
It's also important to understand the players here.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Schmidt and Microsoft do have a history of competing with each other. Mr. Schmidt is a veteran of some Silicon Valley powerhouses, Sun and Novell, which have gone up against Microsoft. And the conventional wisdom at this point is that they did so, in the end, relatively unsuccessfully.
Kevin, how is it that search has become so important here? I mean, that's what we associate with Google, at least on the web. And now suddenly Microsoft's talking a lot about it. Bill Gates had a lot of CEOs out to see him last week talking all about search for corporate clients. Why has search become so central, so important?
Search is so important because it's really the main way that people find things on the web. And it's the starting point for people. And so if you can be there for them, then that gives you a great opportunity to propose other services if you're a company like Google. And then, on the other hand, the way the internet economy is structured, search is where a lot of the advertising revenue actually comes from. They're the ads that appear alongside the search results. And that is now roughly half of all online advertising is related to that sort of advertising. And so a really large chunk of the internet economy is at this point structured around search.
But how do you go from there to the bigger picture? Google has, I'm reading here now, something like, this is your story, 49% of American search queries on the web. How do they jump from there to challenging Microsoft when it comes to software and everything else, challenging Microsoft when it comes to info space dominance?
Well, there are two things going on. The first one is that the distinction between software and the web is really blurring. And Google earlier this year, for example, bought a service called Writely. And what Writely does, essentially, is it gives you a word processor that you don't install as software on your computer, but that you access the way you might access a web page. And you can save your file on the company's hard drive somewhere. And so that's a good example of the convergence between what Google does, which is very web browser-based, and what Microsoft does, which is software that you actually take and install on your computer. The distinction between the two of those is definitely blurring. And so that's sort of a good example of how this fits into the bigger picture.
So when Google looks at Microsoft, do they see a giant that they must or they will knock off?
Well, it's hard to ascribe that sort of motivation to the company as a whole. But I think there are definitely players within Google who really would like to attack Microsoft. And the pattern of the last year or two is that they have not been particularly shy about pursuing some of Microsoft's core areas of revenue. I think there is some truth to what Eric Schmidt says, which is that if you look at online advertising, which accounts for 99% of Google's revenue, it's a huge, it's a big market. It's, you know, roughly $12 to $15 billion in the U.S. this year. It's growing pretty quickly. It's growing about 30% a year. And the websites can barely keep up with the advertiser demand in terms of finding places to put the advertisements. So I think there's some truth to the fact that this is an expanding market and there's room for both companies.
The Wall Street Journal, your paper reported that eBay has called on Yahoo and Microsoft to all three get together, those giants, in an alliance against Google. Why?
Well, eBay's in a particular position because the way its model of selling things on the web is challenged by the fact that people go through search all the time. And so eBay's been this partner for Google with Google for a long time in terms of buying advertisements that people click on. But Google has increasingly taken some steps that have put it closer and closer to eBay's business. And so it's for eBay, it's a matter of self-protection, basically, to try and find some allies who might counterbalance what Google's own power on the web.
Google pushing into all kind of arenas, eBay's and Microsoft's. Kevin Delaney in San Francisco, Wall Street Journal reporter covering Google. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great, thank you.
Joining me now in the studio is John Udell. He's lead analyst for InfoWorld, a trade journal for the information technology industry. John, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Joe Wilcox, senior analyst for Jupiter Research, an internet research firm. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
So I know this has been a big issue for a long time in tech circles. Now it's kind of out in the broader public arena. Joe, is there a death match here?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, not. I mean, what it's really about is information, where it is, who has access to it, and how. When I look at Microsoft versus Google, while I see Google's business competing with Microsoft, I don't see Google aggressively trying to compete with Microsoft so much as Microsoft is competing with Google. And part of that has to do with, perceived threat here. If we go back to the dawn of the PC era, when IBM controlled information, so to speak, through its mainframe monopoly, IBM created a PC with a Microsoft operating system. It saw the personal computer more as an opportunity, as a threat. And yet in the end, through the versatility of the PC and the way it liberated information, it actually changed the relevance of IBM's mainframe business.
Mm-hmm.
Mainframes didn't go away. IBM didn't go away. But the relevance changed. Now, as we look at the web and what is happening with Google and other companies pushing what's called this Web 2.0 concept, the idea is that information can be consumed anywhere, anytime, and on anything, that you don't necessarily need software anymore. And if that vision, proves successful, it will be, more fluid with respect to information.
Let me turn to John Udell here in the studio in Boston. John, do you see the sort of big trends in the way we handle and use information bringing these two giants into conflict? And who's got the advantage if they are in nose-to-nose, Google and Microsoft?
Well, it's a clash of computing styles more than a clash of companies. And so as others have pointed out this morning, or excuse me, today, it's It's the case that Microsoft was the PC era's software company and is about the power of the personal computer.
And the software that runs it, that you buy in a shrink-wrapped package.
Relatively complex, relatively specialized. And the network, however, is the dominant paradigm now. So that is it's just inevitable, and it's not simply Microsoft versus Google. It's the PC model of computing versus the network model.
And that's Google's playground.
And many others.
Steve Ballmer, Joe Wilcox, CEO at Microsoft, says our number one priority now is software as a service. That suggests that, that they're going toward the Google model, that it would come down the web pipe. Is Microsoft going to leave shrink wrap behind?
I don't think at this point we're going to see Microsoft leave shrink wrapped behind. There's too much money on the table. If you look at Microsoft's financials, still Office and Windows, you know, pay the bill. Bills. They're very lucrative products. On the other hand, Microsoft is very concerned, and rightly so, about companies like Salesforce.com. It has contact management software that's delivered through a web browser so that businesses don't need to have the software on their desktop. They can have access to that information anytime, anywhere, on anything. And also, it's very easy for Salesforce.com to get upgrades, new services out to its customers. They just flip a switch, available to everyone through the web browser. With Microsoft's model, it's more laborious, where it has to release new upgrades, companies have to adopt them, they have to install patches and different other types of updates, and it usually takes time. And from a revenue perspective, there's some uncertainty about when companies will move from one version to another.
Let me turn to a call right now from McLean, Virginia. Ade is on the line. Hi, Ade. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Well, what do you see out there, Ade?
Well, it's interesting what they were saying about sort of Microsoft being on the software side and Google on the internet side. I think for layman, I think that there is software on both ends, right?
Right.
So it's still software, only it's been deployed over the internet rather than on a local computer. But the point I wanted to make is I recently bought a computer after 6 years of using my old one.
Okay.
And here I have this new Microsoft operating system, XP Media Center. And it was just amazing to me the things that this thing could do. So, now I can watch TV, on the computer. I can do all kinds of stuff. And all this appeared to be stuff that Microsoft had put in. So it looks to me that in many respects, Microsoft actually, is in the game here. On the other side, that if you were to cut it in black and white, you would say, they're on the computer and Google and all these other folk are on the...
So you think Google, Microsoft is already managing to play on both sides of the fence? Let's look at that. Joe Wilcox, it's a small world now. I'm looking at you quoted in a story from India saying Google is to Microsoft what Microsoft was to IBM in the early 1980s. Of course, Microsoft left IBM in the dust for a while. IBM didn't go away, but it certainly wasn't cutting edge for a while there. Our caller Ade says Microsoft is already playing both sides of the street. Do you see it being left behind?
Well, you never bet against Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft did a good job reinventing itself, so to speak, when we saw the dawn of the World Wide Web in the mid-1990s. On the other hand, Google is at the cusp of a potential, paradigm shift. When you talk about television, I've used Media Center. It's a great product. On the other hand, we have TV shows available through iTunes. ABC is streaming for free its shows over the web. And again, that points to this whole, web model and the potential for success. Another thing to look at here is business model. Microsoft is in the business of selling software for the PC.
Mm-hmm.
It gives away some technologies to enhance the value of Windows, such as the media player and the web browser. In some respects, Google's model is similar in the sense that it gives away stuff for free that it monetizes through contextual advertising and search. And the kind of things that it can give away for free are the kind of things that Microsoft customers pay for. And that's where I think Microsoft perceives a lot of potential risk. The gentleman from Wall Street Journal mentioned this software rightly. If Google were to successfully offer software through a browser for free and sell advertising around it that successfully competed against Office, that could cause some problem for Microsoft, grave concern for Microsoft.
John Udell, how do you see it? Sometimes we look out there and the whole world seems to be melting one piece into the other, advertising flowing away from print, maybe even from television at some point, into Google, Google using all that revenue then to turn around and compete with Microsoft, give away what Microsoft now sells?
So here, Microsoft has an interesting opportunity at the same time that it faces a huge challenge. And the opportunity is that there is essentially limitless demand for more capable software.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenge is that even today, only a fraction of the software that Microsoft has delivered onto people's PCs is exploited fully. People, it's well known, use maybe 5 to 10% of the capability of Microsoft Office.
And Microsoft itself always went with the strategy of good enough. Get it out there when it's good enough. Don't make it perfect before you make it a product. Can Google pull good enough on Microsoft?
That's on the question of quality, but on the question of features, it's been the case for probably 10 years now that Microsoft Office is so loaded with features that most people barely appreciate. So,
but as you say, if people don't use most of
and
it.
And that's exactly the point.
That Google comes along with something for free over the web.
That does the 10% of the stuff that people actually need. It's an extremely powerful model, and I would argue that it's not only limited to advertising-supported business, because the value that I, for example, am getting out of Gmail right now is
Google's online email service.
Which, for example, today I was here in your studio, and I was unable to connect my laptop to your network, rightly so, because of security considerations. Your IT guide made the right call there. But I was able to log into someone's workstation, and I was effectively unhindered, right? The working environment that I need is there for me through the web.
You're at work remote via thanks to Google.
Primarily thanks to the web and services and applications that are delivered through the web with less of the robust capability that Microsoft has always stressed, but much of the functionality that is necessary to do everyday work.
So, Joe, at a very practical level, do you see, are people already turning to Google for fundamental bits of software? Is my desktop soon going to be complements of Google, no charge, thank you, may not have the same functionality as Microsoft Office, but it's just flowing free to me over the web?
Certainly Google hopes so for more than a couple reasons. One being, search, unlike desktop software, is easy to switch. If you get tired of Google or you see something better, you just type in a new web address and you can search somewhere else. Google is also trying to release these applications to create what we call some stickiness with the customers so that they will stay with the Google services and some of the software. The answer is, to your question, direct answer is, it's still, too early to say where things will ultimately end up. It's hard to bet against Microsoft, given the way it's been able to embrace so many challenges in the past. Where Google may eventually succeed is how it builds out, its online, platform around, advertising and how people, use that. And also, Google isn't the only player here. We look at other companies that are offering software services, or what you call software as a service over the web. You have Yahoo with Flickr, the photo sharing software service. People can use that for free, or they can pay $25 a year and get some additional benefits and no advertising. I know people that use that service to keep all their photos. It's kind of like their digital shoebox. They feel safe there. That's behavioral changing. When that begins to happen in mass, if it does, then we may see a dramatic shift from the desktop. Keep in mind, Microsoft sells software. Its server business is doing very well. It may be that its business may shift to the server and actually serving up the software that people consume on the desktop.
Let's go to our listeners. Doug's calling from Hagerstown, Maryland. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a director of software development for a company in Canada, actually, but we do a lot of work on the web, and I weigh in on this debate definitely on the side of Google.
What do you mean when you say that, Doug? They're winning what?
What we feel, my developers and I, is that over the past couple of years, things have, on the side of tools and the kind of demand that our customers want, people are increasingly looking for simple, easy-to-use applications that they can access on the web. Salesforce.com was mentioned earlier. There are a couple of others out there, a company by the name of 37 Signals.
But you've got an interest in this. You're part of a web-oriented software company, so this is your future too, right?
This absolutely is our future. And, you know, we have choices to make. We can push stuff out over the web, or we can develop, just like Microsoft does, we can develop installable software. And there are some tremendous advantages to having software delivered over the web, and we see now that every week there are new applications that are coming out using these Web 2.0 technologies.
Does that mean Google wins, Microsoft loses? What about for users? Who wins and loses if this migrates to the web?
Microsoft is not going to lose in the long term, mm-hmm. because they still have a lockup on Windows and the desktop environment that people use. But increasingly, I think tools like Office, which, you know, retail cost just a fortune. I mean, $400, $500 for a copy of Office. Increasingly now you can get much of the same functionality, or at least you can get the 10% of the functionality that you really need every day over the web.
And you're off and running without that shrink wrap. Doug, thanks very much for your call. I want to put that to John Udell with me in the studio. John, okay, so there's at one level there's a conflict here, a competition between two great big companies. But for most users, what's the migration mean? What does it mean for users that we're going to go maybe from shrink wrap to software coming down the web, that search becomes central here?
Well, I can give you a really concrete example. Mm-hmm. I went on vacation last summer and brought along a laptop and almost never used it. Because every place we stayed with friends.
Right.
And there was always a computer of some flavor. It didn't matter what. It could have been a Macintosh. It could have been a PC.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a broadband network connection. And effectively everything I needed to do, which included email, which included searching for maps and printing out maps and directions and things like that, finding information about the places we were going, coordinating a certain number of work related activities along the side. I mean, I didn't need to bring my PC.
But you always were on someone's PC. So the
I was
PC
on someone's, but it didn't matter. It was, in other words, what we're looking at is the commoditization of the device,
mm-hmm.
and that the important part of what you need to interact with is really living in the network. And there are, you know, a number of benefits to that. Not the least of which is if you lose that laptop.
Doesn't matter.
It does. Well, I mean, it matters, but you're not going to feel like you've had a stroke.
But the big brain is remote increasingly. You're not carrying it. It's not sitting in your house.
No, but I would point out here that this isn't simply an either-or kind of thing. As long ago as 2000, Microsoft made big announcements about their intention to be able to deliver software as a service, as it's now called. And so it's not a question of whether this is going to happen. It's just a question of when and how for them, you know, they gradually move away from the shrink wrapped model and into this other world. They have to stage that progression very carefully.
Joe, what does it mean for us? Not just in terms of, let's say, as John says, you've got, as long as you can tap into the web, you'll have basically all you need and want everywhere you are. But the Google model, the search model, as opposed to the software model, does it change our interaction with information with each other? Will we have a different flavor in this next great chapter of info access and sharing?
Well, we already do, and that's one reason the Google / Web 2.0 model is so compelling. If you look at how we work, if you go back a decade, 15 years for sure, people were in the office. Their role was determined by their location. You worked at your green screen, your PC, whatever, and all the information was there. You left, and you're in your home role. Now information is and work is very mobile. People, they get email and Blackberries and then use those same devices for personal and work. They have smartphones, cell phones, whatever. They have laptops that they carry around with them. There's a lot of commingling of behavior and information. Role is typically determined by context. Within one phone call, you can go from from one interaction, you can go from someone who's working, talking to your boss at home, and then playing with your kids. Location doesn't change, but your role does. The problem with this mobility is the information in some ways out of control, because people are taking this work information out on different devices, and that creates privacy, security, regulatory problems. And companies can begin to solve some of that problem by centralizing information, whether it's done on big servers within their corporations and allow people to access, their employees to access information through a web browser, or if it's done through these different services like a Salesforce.com, where, again, there's a central repository and people access it through the web browser.
But all that depth of information, or at least an awful lot of it, and a lot of the computing capacity going to the web, being remote, being in many ways shared. Let me take a call from John in Waltham, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello. I have a question about this send it out the web and send it back model, which is that I've seen that the processing power of the desktop or laptop computer has always stayed well ahead of what the Internet can support.
Right.
And so there are many tasks such as editing video, audio, images, and highly formatted documents that you want to do with your desktop processor, and that the internet providers want you to do too, as evidenced by the increasing force or drive to charge money for those that have high data transfer rates.
So that means Microsoft can sleep peacefully at night, John, or not?
Well, it works. The other side works too. Data, where there's the need for huge processing power in order to send you a small amount of data, such as where you go next on your sales route that's most efficient, you know, go down this road, then the other model works great. So I see that they're both going to continue to be important. The Internet becomes more important, obviously, but I sure am not going to give up my desktop computer and laptop computer to send video out the Internet to be edited.
Because you still want some of that really potent capacity right there physically with you. John, thanks for your call. John Udell, I see you nodding along here. Does that mean everybody wins, everybody thrives? Google with its web base, Microsoft with its software base?
I hope so. I really do, because, again, it's not an either-or, and the caller is absolutely right. We have extraordinary capability at our desk sides and carrying around in our briefcases and on our handheld devices. It's extraordinary.
We're joined right now from New York by Douglas Rushkoff. He's author of a number of books on culture and technology, including Get Back in the Box, Innovation from the Inside Out. He's a professor at New York University's Interactive Telecommunications Program. Douglas Rushkoff, thanks for being with us. What do you see in this fight?
Well, I don't know. I think that the hidden battle, if there is one in all this, is really which company is going to be able to deliver eyeballs to advertisers more effectively. You know, so whether we're talking about, you know, Microsoft delivering, you know, content through MSN or through one of its new media players, or whether it's, you know, Google creating you know, email services or Google Television or whatever they might do, it's really still the game of them jockeying to prove to Madison Avenue or corporate America that they will be the next advertising platform.
But that has not traditionally been where Microsoft came from. Are you saying advertisers are soon going to buy the software for all or most of us with their ads?
Well, interestingly enough, I feel like there's a bunch of industries that are in trouble, almost dying industries, whose genuine revenue streams are in question. And advertising is certainly one of them. These companies don't really make money anymore for the corporations that hire them. And I think that the internet businesses and online businesses and computer businesses are really looking for a way to convince their investors that they can expand. So you've got two major industries each claiming that their partnership with the other one is what's going to allow them to expand. But yeah, I think that both of these companies need to prove that they have a revenue stream other than whatever it is that's giving them revenue right now.
Joe Wilcox, you've said that Google is, in a way, living parasitically off Microsoft now because so much of the world runs on Microsoft software. Google sits up on top of that with its lovely ad revenue stream. Is there enough of that? Doug Rushkoff says maybe not for that to support our sort of software desires in the future if it's all flowing down the web rather than shrink-wrapped.
Well, the one problem for Google is that, in a sense, it's a one-trick pony. While Google is called a search company, I disagree. I think it's an information company, and search is a means to an end, with the end being the information. Google monetizes that information, you know, through search, contextual advertising, and the such. But that's really where the revenue comes from. If you look at Microsoft, well, it sells software in a lot of different areas. It has operating systems, applications, server software. And so its revenue stream is more multifaceted. And in that sense, it's stronger. The question really is the future, you know, where, how successful, you know, Google will continue to be. And also, what tricks Microsoft will be able to play to take on Google, particularly as it launches new advertising products. And its front and center product right now is its new MSN Ad Center.
Right. Google not doing too badly. Profits up 60% in the last quarter. Microsoft's up just 16%. Of course, that's from a much larger base to begin with. Tom's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up another point of where Microsoft's software service strategy that was just announced and how they could actually end run Google in a way, and that's their Live Anywhere product. I'm not sure if you've heard
Live Anywhere and Live Search. Everybody in Redmond talking a lot about that now for corporate clients and everybody else ultimately to find what they need.
Right. It was interesting. They announced this at E3 last week, mm-hmm. where basically this is an evolution of their Xbox Live console network, where essentially they're bringing gaming to not only Xbox 360, the next-gen console, but to the Microsoft Vista platform and to mobile handsets, right?
Vista, this new version of the Office suite of business software coming.
That would be the next version of Windows, mm-hmm. actually.
Excuse me.
Right. And the concept was very mind-boggling because it allows a user, whether they're on a mobile platform, like a cell phone, to purchase content to send to somebody on their Xbox 360 to play, right? And they could edit it later on with their Microsoft Vista PC. And while it's not designed initially for search, it really will grab a lot of the younger demographic, and they will obviously extend that to many other areas outside of gaming.
So sticking the fork into the Xbox and off they go. John, what about Microsoft's latest announcements here about live search and the rest? You see them competing with Google. Bill Gates saying, Google, you know, you type in keywords and you get a bunch of stuff you don't want. There's a smarter way of doing it. Can Microsoft end-run Google at its own game?
Well, Microsoft's strength is in software development, and there's limitless value in software. So the question is not simply, can software be ad supported, but where can software go? What can, you know, and if Microsoft can wrap its head around the network model as they are gradually doing, mm-hmm. then they will continue to be very strong, because what Microsoft has done all these years is cultivate an army of software developers who build on top of their platform. So they have this concept of having a relationship with people who build on their stuff.
Sure.
And that part of the model is just missing from Google. Google is now considered a platform, but Google has nothing like the formal developer program.
So
that
who's
Microsoft
building
has.
Out all the wonderments that might be there? Doug Rushkoff, you also raised questions about that ad revenue model of Google, saying, look, people today are nearly saturated with advertising, and there may be limits to how much they can scoop from that pool.
Yeah, I mean, I personally feel that we're sort of at an end-stage advertising now, where companies are starting to realize that certainly traditional advertising and almost certainly non-traditional advertising don't really work, that they're not really worth what people are paying. So even if Google can give certain ads or links, you know, what they're, you know, calling eyeball hours, if they can get eyeballs to see them, doesn't necessarily mean that even with the best positioning, it's going to translate into sales that are worth the kind of money people are spending to get seen. And if that gets exposed, then Google's really going to have to go back to its original offerings, which was really just to make the Internet an easier place for people to use. You know, I think as long as they focus on that rather than ads being everything, and as long as he just said, as long as Microsoft focuses on actually creating software, which means getting people's PC chips to do new and great things, both companies are going to be fine. As long as they're competing for, right now, you know, for advertising and media delivery dollars, I think they're going to start to really get off track.
Joe Wilcox, you've said that Google can live with Microsoft's success, but Microsoft cannot live with Google's.
Yeah, that's how I see it. Microsoft clearly sees Google as a threat and is treating it as such. And I think Google is just trying to go about its business. It happens to compete with some of what Microsoft does. But I do believe that there could be room for both companies if they wanted there to be room for them. But I'm not sure we're going to see that happen. I'm sure we won't see that happen.
So what does that mean? By one of these has to go down despite everybody's denials that there's a death match underway here?
Well, I don't know if one of them has to go down. Well, if one of them goes down, I think it ultimately would be at the hands of Microsoft changing how it does business today and embracing, you know, this network world even more than it does. And that means more software as a service.
Here it comes. Everything toward the world flowing in over that network connection. Information shared up and down, sideways. Joe Wilcox at Jupiter Research, thanks very much for being with us this hour. Really appreciate your perspective. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Doug Rushkoff at NYU, author of Get Back in the Box. Douglas Rushkoff, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Udell from InfoWorld, wonderful to have you with us this hour. Thanks for your perspective.
My pleasure.
This is On Point.